So I say this to the militias and all others who believe that the greatest threat to freedom comes from the government instead of from those who would take away our freedom. If you say the government is in a conspiracy to take your freedom away, there is no freedom.
They'll never take our freedom!
Freedom?
Hello everyone and welcome to Freedom Rings. This is Tommy Freedom broadcasting to you loud and clear on the TFR radio network from a cabin high atop a mountain ridge somewhere in Appalachia. I'll be your voice of reason for the next 30 minutes, so keep it right here. Folks, and welcome back to another episode of Freedom Rings. Now, this week we are back to the Off the Beaten Path series, and as evidenced by that intro from Ozzy, his cover of Mississippi Queen, we are in the southern Gulf state of Mississippi. Now, Mississippi has a long history with a lot of heritage. You had Civil War battles, Revolutionary War battles. You had garbage during the 1960s that went on in Mississippi. You have plantations, farming. There's just a very rich history throughout the state of Mississippi. And I want to get into a little bit of that today. It's not a really big state, so should have no problem getting through with it in one show. But stick around, folks, because there are some things in Mississippi that you had no idea that were there. So first of all, a little trivia on the state of Mississippi. It covers an area of 47,716 square miles, which is 9 times bigger than the state of Connecticut. But Mississippi still is not a very large state when it comes to all the states in general. New England should really be one state in and of itself. Now, the capital is also the largest city, that's Jackson. It has some major rivers, the Big Black, the Mississippi, obviously, the Pearl, and the Yazoo. And its elevation goes from sea level to 806 feet high at Woodall Mountain. The state flower and the state tree are both the magnolia, and the origin of the name seems to come most likely from a Chippewa term, Missizihi, which means Great River, which would certainly make sense. Now, a lieutenant of the French explorer La Salle first wrote it down as Michisepe. So that is where the name is derived from. Now, its nicknames are the Bayou State, the Border Eagle State, the Eagle State, the Magnolia State, and the Mudcat State. Now, there are some interesting people that have come from the state of Mississippi. Some famous sons and daughters include Jefferson Davis, who we all know became the head of the Confederacy after the South seceded. Elvis Presley, who I'm sure one or two of you may have heard of, was born in Tupelo. And let's see, who else here? Tennessee Williams was also born in the state of Mississippi. Now, Mississippi leads the nation in producing upholstered furniture. Now, that's an odd bit of trivia, something I never knew. Now, the first heart and lung transplant took place in 1963 and 1964 at the University of Mississippi Medical Center in Jackson. That's very interesting. And women in Columbus helped inaugurate Memorial Day on April 25th, 1866. They decorated the graves of Confederate soldiers. and legend has it that they put aside wartime allegiance and place flowers on the graves of Union men as well. Now see, that just goes to show you how friendly people are in the South. So that's a little information, some trivia about the state of Mississippi. One final note, I see in the timeline that in 1874, 70 blacks were killed during race riots in Vicksburg. Well, things really haven't changed too much, have they? It occurred in the 1870s, the 1960s, and the 2010s. They never seem to learn. It's been going on for well over 150 years, folks, and it's not going to stop anytime soon. Now, Mississippi is a pretty diverse state, and I don't mean that just culturally or ethnically. I mean, there's a lot to see and do in the state of Mississippi, and there's a lot more than you would actually think. Of course, you're going to think of the coast. You're going to think of the beaches, the casinos in Biloxi. You're going to think of that sort of a thing, the cypress swamps, plantations, that sort of a thing, maybe some battlefields. And yes, it has all those. Mississippi also has a petrified forest. It has some badlands, things that you would not expect to see on the east side of the Mississippi River. So Mississippi is one of those states that kind of has like a whole mishmash of all the other states combined, which makes it very unique. It is a pretty good sized state. It's an average sized state, I'd say. It's not tiny like the New England states, and it's not huge like some of the western states, but it's probably an average sized state. So you're going to cover several hundred square miles no matter which direction that you go. Now, I want to start with something that is typically Mississippian when you think of that. And that is an old plantation called Rowan Oak. And that's Rowan Oak, not Roanoke, as in the island. But this is located in the town of Oxford. Now, this was the home of the writer William Faulkner. And it's an antebellum house. And it's got a lot of simplicity in its exterior. It's not a very fancy house, but it's very stately. And of course, the driveway is lined with oak trees. So if you're into antebellum houses, then this is something that you might enjoy. It's not a very big house. I'm looking at a photograph of it here, and there's actually really nothing really out of the ordinary about it, except that it's cool when you go through one of these homes. Now, I had the opportunity to stay at an old plantation house like this in Georgetown, South Carolina. It was called Georgetown Inn. And we were there the week before they started filming The Patriot there. So it was really cool when The Patriot came out to go back and see where my car had been parked with Mel Gibson rising up on his horse and firing off his pistols in the middle of the night, and then to see the house set on fire. And then when the second house was burned down, it was actually the same house. They just set the second half of the house, the other side of the house, on fire. So these houses are really cool. Of course, we got to go in and walk around, and it was a really cool thing. So even if you're not into really fancy places, it's nice to get out there and walk the grounds. So keep that in mind, Rowan Oak in Oxford, Mississippi. Now, the next place I want to talk to you about is called the Cottonlandia Museum, and this is in Greenwood. Don't let the name of this place fool you, because this is more than just cotton. It offers a fascinating overview of the archaeological, natural, economic, and the social heritage of the whole Delta area of Mississippi. Now, it contains an extensive collection of Indian artifacts, which include some of the earliest dart and spear points that were made on this continent, and a few are the same type that were used about 10,000 BC to kill mastodons. So that's very interesting if you're into Indian artifacts. What else do they have here? One of the most valuable and exquisite displays is the group of multicolored pottery effigy vessels, which depict a bobcat, deer, fish, possum, and other creatures in very naturalistic manners. And these vessels date from somewhere around 700 AD. And it's some of the finest pieces of Seneca pottery that are available, and they're all on display. a huge collection of beads. So if you're into beadwork, which I do appreciate, by the way, folks, the detail that went into quill and beadwork was amazing. So I do appreciate that sort of stuff. And there's also relics of the time when cotton was king, which includes an improved Eagle cotton gin, a McCormick Farmall tractor of the kind that actually made mules obsolete, an 1850 wooden harrow with hand-forged points that were made by slaves, a boll weevil catcher, and one case displays various grades of cotton from good middling to middling tinged and strict good ordinary. Not really certain what that means, but if you're interested in this sort of thing, you can let me know when you visit it. There are also photographs of steamboats that, and also for the town of Greenwood when it was back in its heyday. There are docks, hotels, and saloons all lined the Yazoo River waterfront, and it emphasizes the importance of river transportation back then. So it's a really interesting place. And if I'm reading a little bit quicker this time, it's because George was kind enough to realize I could not see before, and he did fetch my reading glasses, so I can actually see these notes and that sort of thing. So it's going to go a little bit smoother here. But a very, very interesting place. Now, I want to talk to you about the Mississippi Petrified Forest. This is in the town of Flora, ironically named, Flora, meaning Latin for plants. And this is, wow, 36 million years this thing goes back. So let's just see what it says here, because I had not actually been there, so I'm just looking here. The fossilized logs in the small forest, which is the only petrified forest east of the Rocky Mountains, are some 36 million years old. The remains of living denizens of primeval forests, they were deposited here as driftwood and buried in and preserved by the sand and silt. Now, there's a path that traverses the site. There's some woodlands with loblolly pine, sweet gum, elm, wild plums, and some occasional clumps of yucca and prickly pear cactus. But the most striking feature that is found here is a very curiously anonymous section of deeply eroded red and pink cliffs that are studded with petrified logs that are just extruding out from the cliff face, and it resembles a miniature Badlands. Now, I'd like to clarify what Badlands are, folks. Yes, there are Badlands in the Dakotas, but that is not the only place. Badlands are eroded areas of either gravel, sand, or stone, so just keep that in mind. And there's markers along the path, and you have a leaflet that you can pick up that walks you through the whole thing. It takes about 40 minutes to go through this thing, and it ends up at a kind of small but a rather interesting museum that's devoted to petrified wood. And the displays also include some vertebrate fossils and an array of gems and minerals. Sounds like a really cool place, not really big, but definitely something to do for an afternoon if you ever find yourself in that area. And it's open daily except for Christmas, and they do charge an admission. Very, very cool sounding place, if you ask me. Okay, I got time for one more quick one before I have to go to break. And this one looks really interesting. This is something that I have never encountered before. It's called the Palestinian Gardens. It's in the town of Loosedale. And it's a setting that depicts a scale model of the Holy Land. Now, someone named Harvell Jackson was inspired by the idea that to understand the Bible, one should have some sense of the place as central to its narrative. So he's depicted the Holy Land. It's scaled at 1 yard to the mile, set on 20 acres of Mississippi woodland, and it was a labor of love that took him and his wife many years. The Dead Sea and the Mediterranean are represented by ponds, and the towns and villages are mostly made of concrete, domed and pillared with white plaster and carved with doors, windows, and niches. Many of the plants surrounding the models are species mentioned in the Bible. And the Reverend Mr. Jackson himself, Harvell Jackson, not Jesse Jackson, the Reverend Mr. Jackson himself conducts tours of the gardens. His informative discourse adds to the appeal of his model of Palestine during the time of Jesus and enables one to conjure up the image of Mount Hebron clad in eternal snows upon a little hillock whitened with marble chips. That sounds really, really cool. It's open daily, March through November, and the admission is free, but donations are encouraged. Obviously, anytime something is done through the church or something like that, they don't charge admission, but they do ask for donations. So, I'm not sure exactly who Mr. Jackson is, but it sounds like he took a lot of time to do this, and it would certainly be worthwhile stopping in to see. Again, that was in the town of Loosedale, Mississippi. So I am at a time for a break here. I want to come back. Got a few more interesting things to talk about. And I'm going to start with the Grand Gulf Military Monument.
From now, my kids will be outnumbered. Are you going to let that happen? Don't leave the mess for your children to clean up. Join the struggle. Start here at KKK Radio.
Minorities, homosexuals, and women. I'm not a hater, but I hate that line.
Me too. You know, you see it written like that in the media.
Yes, I've noticed that. Why do you think that is? I don't have anything in common with so-called minorities.
Minorities, right. White people are the world's minority.
That's true.
I think they like to group all women together so white women won't consider their race. If they don't consider their white identity, they won't recognize the threats against it.
That's a really good point.
So, whenever I hear the phrase minorities and women, or minorities, homosexuals and women, I'll call it what it is, cheap shots against white women.
This message brought to you by the White Women's Perspective.
College students, high school students, business owners, entrepreneurs, learn how you can be a person of influence for a new America. Enroll in Soldiers of the Cross Training Institute. Learn more at www.sotctraininginstitute.com.
Gay Pride Days, school assemblies, posters on the wall. It's in our face every day. What's a white Christian teen to do? And does anyone really care? Listen each week to White Youth Focus, where teens discuss the propaganda war against them. Moderated by caring and thoughtful white Christian activists, Billy and Charity. Because it's okay to be white and proud.
Hey folks, Tommy Freedom here for Freedom Rings. I invite you to tune in every week and listen to my show, Freedom Rings, and hear what I, Tommy Freedom, have to say. It's usually pretty interesting and quite informative. It may have something to do with freedom, it may have something to do with liberty, it may be downright funny, but it will always be informative. So be sure and tune in each week to listen to me, Tommy Freedom, here on my show at Freedom Rings, broadcasting to you loud and clear on KKK Radio.
Walking along, whistling a song, barefoot and fantasy free. A big river boat passing us by. She's headed for New Orleans. There she goes, disappearing around the bend. Mississippi, you make me feel like a child again. A cool river breeze, like peppermint leaves. The taste of it takes me back. Chewing on a straw, torn over rose. I can't pull an old straw hat. Muddy river, just like a long lost friend. Hold on, Mississippi, you make me feel like a child again. Roll on, Mississippi.
Roll on, Mississippi. Now, I haven't heard that one in a long time. Where'd you pull that up from, George? Oh, okay, yeah. That's actually an exception to the rule. There are certain venues I will not play on this show, and that is an exception to the rule. That was Charlie Pride. And there are a lot of people who do not know that Charlie Pride is black, but he did not sound black. He sounded very intelligent, very well educated, and he did not sing like these ghetto hip-hop morons do now. So that was the one exception to the rule. Please do check with me next time, George, before doing that. But since that is a nice country and western song, even though I am not big into country and western, we'll go ahead and let that slide this time. Now, I told you before the break, I came back, I was going to get into the Grand Gulf Military Monument. Now, this is located in Port Gibson, and this is a really cool place. The restored buildings here are reminders that this was once a thriving river port nurtured by the cotton boom and so prosperous that it was a candidate to become the state capital. But in 1843, a yellow fever epidemic struck, and 10 years later, many who survived the epidemic were then killed by a major tornado. Geez, talk about jumping out of the frying pan into the fire. Then, in 1855, the Mississippi River began to shift its course, and in the next 5 years, it destroyed 55 city blocks, including the entire business area. My God, could it get any worse? In 1862, the final blow, I guess so, the final blow came when attacking Union forces, damn Yankees, led by General U.S. Grant, outflanked the Confederate troops established here and forced them to abandon Grand Gulf. Nothing remains of Fort Wade and Fort Cobun, but some remnants of earthworks. Now, today the park commemorates both the battle and Grand Gulf's heyday. The museum has a detailed map of that battle and photos of the Union ironclads that were involved, along with swords, rifles, muskets, cannonballs, flags, and war-related documents. Now, on the grounds are a few hand-hewn log houses, a lovely carpenter Gothic chapel, an atmospheric graveyard overhung with Spanish moss. What is an atmospheric graveyard? George, look that up for me. An atmospheric graveyard. Maybe the setting, I guess. Okay, a nice atmosphere. Okay, that's a new one on me. Probably unique in the world is the homemade submarine powered by a Model T Ford engine, which was used to run whiskey during Prohibition. Awesome Southern ingenuity there. A boardwalk leads to the edge of the river, and Hilltop Observation Tower provides an overview of this instrument of Grand Gulf's rise and fall. And this is open year-round. There's something very interesting about this. I remember coming across this years and years ago. There is a mortar here. And folks, if you're not familiar with mortars, let me explain the difference between today's mortars and mortars from the era of the Civil War. And nowadays, what you think of a mortar, you drop this thing, it goes kook, and it fires this thing up in the air and it rains down. Well, original mortars were basically short, stubby cannons that were made for lobbing projectiles, most of them incendiary or explosive charges. And this mortar, oh, it looks like it's about maybe 30 inches in diameter and about maybe 40 inches deep. So it's not very big, but it is massive for the ball coming out of there. And it had to be, because these things had to fire, you know, immense weights with immense charges. And this short little stubby thing could actually hurl a 200-pound explosive bomb 2.5 miles. That's very, very impressive, and that's something I've always remembered. And I, like I said, I ran to this years ago, and it's great to come across it again because I would love to revisit this place. So now, thanks to George's playing Charlie Pride for a bumper and wasting a lot of time, I don't have enough time to cover any more places in Mississippi. But I want to tell you a really quick story here, because the song I'm going to leave off with is about somebody being stranded in the state of Mississippi. And I have just a really brief story about something that happened to me one time when I stayed overnight in a rest area. Years ago, I would sleep in the back of my pickup truck one night, then spend the next night in a motel, and it was a lot cheaper than spending every night in a motel. Well, my first night out was in a rest area in Mississippi, sleeping in the back of the truck, and I woke up to the sound of voices about 2:33 in the morning, and it sounded like a bunch of kids. So all of a sudden, I popped my head up, and they were kind of surprised, and, well, they awakened me, so I decided to have a cigarette, and they were like late teens. And we just started talking, and they told me they were just on their way out west, and they told me about how they'd grabbed a relative's car, and one of them had grabbed his daddy's gun, and they showed it to me, and it was like, whoa, you know? That's why nowadays, it's always safer to avoid these areas. So I'm going to leave off real quick here, folks, with the Ballad of the Uneasy Rider by Charlie Daniels, 1973, when he got stuck in Jackson, Mississippi on a Saturday night. Till next week, my friends, this has been Tommy Freedom for Freedom Reigns. Out for now.
I was taking a trip out to L.A., tooling along in my Chevrolet, toking on the number and digging on the radio. Just as I crossed the Mississippi line, I heard that highway start to whine, and I knew that left rear tire was about to go. Well, the spare was flat, and I got up tight, cause there wasn't a filling station in sight, so I just limped on down the shoulder on the rim. I went as far as I could, and when I stopped the car, it was right in front of this little bar, kind of a redneck-looking joint called the Dewdrop Inn. Well, I stuffed my hair up under my hat and told the bartender that I had a flat, and would he be kind enough to give me change for a one. Well, there was one thing I was sure proud to see. There wasn't a soul in the place except for him and me, and he just looked disgusted and pointed toward the telephone. I called up a station down the road a ways, and he said he wasn't very busy today and he could have somebody there in just about 10 minutes or so. He said, "Now you just stay right where you're at," and I didn't bother to tell the darn fool that I sure as hell didn't have any place else to go. I just ordered up a beer and sat down at the bar when some guy walked in and said, "Who owns this car with the peace sign and the mag wheels and four on the floor?" Well, he looked at me and I damn near died, and I decided that I'd just wait outside, so I laid a dollar on the bar and headed for the door. Just when I thought I'd get out of there with my skin, these five big dudes come strolling in with this one old drunk chick or some fellow with green teeth. And I was almost to the door when the biggest one said, "You tip your hat to this lady, son." And when I did, all that hair fell out from underneath. Now the last thing I wanted was to get in a fight in Jackson, Mississippi on a Saturday night, especially when there was three of them and only one of me. They all started laughing and I felt kind of sick. I knew I'd better think of something pretty quick, so I just reached out and kicked old Green Teeth right in the knee. Now he let out a yell that'd curl your hair, but before he could move, I grabbed me a chair and said, "Watch him, folks, because he's a thoroughly dangerous man." Well, you may not know it, but this man's a spy. He's an undercover agent for the FBI, and he's been sent down here to infiltrate the Ku Klux Klan. He was still bent over holding on to his knee, but everybody else was looking and listening to me, and I laid it on thicker and heavier as I went. I said, "Would you believe this man has gone as far as tearing Wallace stickers off the bumpers of cars, and he voted for George McGovern for president?" "Well, he's a friend of them long-haired hippie-type pickle fags. I bet you he's even got a commie flag tacked up on the wall inside of his garage. He's a snake in the grass, I tell you guys. He may look dumb, but that's just a disguise. He's a mastermind in the ways of espionage." They all started looking real suspicious at him, and he jumped up and said, "Now just wait a minute, Jim. You know he's lying. I've been living here all of my life. I'm a faithful follower of Brother John Birch, and I belong to the Antioch Baptist Church. And I ain't even got a garage. You can call home and ask my wife." Then he started saying something about the way I was dressed, but I didn't wait around to hear the rest. I was too busy moving and hoping I didn't run out of luck. When I hit the ground, I was making tracks, and they were just taking my car down off the jack, so I threw the man a 20 and jumped in and fired that mother up. Mario Andretti would have sure been proud of the way I was moving when I passed that crowd coming out the door and headed toward me in a trot. And I guess I should have gone ahead and run, but somehow I just couldn't resist the fun of chasing them all just once around the parking lot. Well, they're headed for their car, but I hit the gas and spun around and headed them off at the pass. I was slinging gravel and putting a ton of dust in the air. Well, I had them all out there stepping and fetching like their heads were on fire and their asses was catching, but I figured I'd better go ahead and split before the cops got there. When I hit the road, I was really wheezing. wheeling, had gravel flying and rubber squealing, and I didn't slow down till I was almost to Arkansas. Well, I think I'm gonna reroute my trip. I wonder if anybody'd think I'd flipped if I went to L.A. via Omaha.